function of time. It oscillates like the red curve. Okay. And by now we should be used to these forms. This is one period worth, right? And then that just repeats, right? The period is the smallest chunk that repeats. And typically for the period, we've used capital T corresponding to the period is the frequency, little f, which is one over the period. And the form of the alternating source is the voltage is given by a peak voltage sine 2 pi f t. In this case, I can get the current if I divide out by R. We see that the current, which I represented with the yellow curve, okay, peaks at the same time and goes through zero at the same time as the voltage. So that's what we mean by the current is in phase with the voltage in this case. For capacitors, if I just have a capacitor, okay, and I have an alternating source over the capacitor, and then I look at the potential difference, it's related to the current in the circuit, times something called the capacitive reactance. The capacitive reactance is 1 over 2 pi frequency times the capacitance. The units have units of ohms. And an investigation shows that the current is not in phase. The current actually peaks a quarter of a period before the voltage peaks. Okay. So we can see this is a quarter of a period where the peak is, and it's beforehand. So that's what we get, that the current is said to lead by 90 degrees, because 90 degrees is a quarter of 360 degrees a cycle in terms of angles. An inductor or coil has a similar form, except we now introduce the inductive reactance. The inductive reactance is 2 pi FL, where L is the inductance or the self-inductance of the coil. And in this case, we see that the peak of the current is ahead of the peak of the voltage by a quarter of a period. And so the current lags meaning it's behind. All right? So we see this in time, because what you have here is that the voltage is going up and down and up and down, right? And so the voltage reaches a peak, but the current's not quite there yet. So in time, you see a quarter of a period later, then the current reaches up, right? It's behind in time, right? In the other case, when it says leads, it leads in time, right? It hits its peak at an earlier time. So that's where the lag from the leads comes from. You have to think in terms of time. Okay, so those are the key ingredients that we put together for circuits with one element. What we'd like to do, okay, is consider what happens when we put several of these components together. Okay, and there are various ways to talk about how this works in putting several components together. Okay. And so I'm going to talk about RCL or LRC or whatever combination. Okay, you want to write those three letters. Because in various books they're written in different ways. Okay. So an RCL or LRC circuit in series. So the idea is I'm going to take a resistor, a capacitor, and an inductor, put them in series, and connect them to an alternating source. something like this. There's a resistor. I just put in a capacitor. And I can put in inductor. R, capacitor, capacitance C, inductor has inductance L, thus RCL. Okay, so that's the form. And across here we have a voltage, which will be V0 sine ILC. And with this, we'll have a current that's sloshing around, okay, which is going to take particular form, that the current is going to have a peak value that's going to be a sine. We have a 2 pi ft that's going to oscillate with the same frequency. However, if I just left it this way, then these would be in phase. And as I indicated the other day, I could add a or subtract a pi over 2 if I just had a capacitor or an inductor, but in general we're going to have to add an arbitrary phase. All right, this is the phase or the phase angle, and I don't know what that is. All right, there's a peak current. Of course, the measured value of current is IRS, so whatever that I is, divide by the square root of 2. Get the measured value of the current that would be in this particular circuit. So that is the picture. Obviously, we can come up with much more complicated circuits, but that would take a little bit different kind of mathematics and playing around. So this is going to be sufficient enough for us to get a taste of what goes on. Okay. So that's is the story. Now, if I went back a couple of chapters, we remember having problems with circuit elements, so mostly we had resistors and batteries, and that was about it. And so what we did was we looked at the loops, and we applied Kirchhoff's laws, right? We had a junction rule, and we had a loop rule that we applied. So what's nice in this problem is it's only one loop. So we can imagine using, okay, the loop rule. Remember what the loop rule was. The idea was you go across various elements, you look at the rises and the drops in the potential. Okay. So we look at voltage. If I didn't have these elements here, I would have a drop across the resistor. And I could figure that out how. If I had a current running through a resistor, what would the drop, what would the resistor look like? You don't remember? How did you figure that out?
Resistance times voltage times the
something. Current. Resistance times current. V equals IR. Remember we went to get the drops and the rises, we went across the resistor and put IRs. Okay, so we can do the same kind of thing here. I have a source of potential V sitting here. I can look at the potential drop across the resistor R, and I could say that that's VR, and then I could look across here, and I have VC, and I can look across there, and I have VL, and I can add up all of those drops, and all the sum of these drops should be equal to this. The only difference now is that my V is time dependent. So somehow I have to add this time dependence, this is time dependent, this is time dependent, that's time dependent. So it's not quite as easy, okay, for us to add these all up. But the basic idea is if I use Kirchhoff's laws, I can write down the relationship between all these voltages. Okay. Now these are not the RMS values, so I would say that V, okay, if the current's going in this direction, for example, for that moment, right, I have a rise here, I have three drops. So the rise would equal the drop across the resistor plus the drop across the capacitor plus the drop across the inductor. So that's the general idea. But there's a lot buried in this. All right, so we need a way somehow to add these up and look at their contributions. So there is a schematic way to do this, and what the idea is, I'm going to use this schematic way to at least get us to a point where I can determine, okay, what the RMS voltage is and what the RMS current is in this problem. Okay. And what I'm going to end up getting is that the RMS voltage is equal to the RMS current times some x. Well, actually, it's not x. Some reason they call it z. Okay, and z stands for something called the impedance that I'll introduce. So we're going to get a form very similar to this, but I'm going to get a little more complicated expression that will replace this x, which in the case when I don't have two of these elements should reduce to those other cases that we did already. So all those cases that I did over there are going to be all combined in one compact, unified form. Okay, so that's where I'm headed. So how am I going to do this? I'm going to talk about what are called phasors. And phasors are more of a pictorial representation of how these voltages are behaving. So I'm going to focus first off on the source. Which is essentially the left side of the equation. The idea is that I can represent this function in a little diagram. And the idea is the following. I think of the plane. And I think of what happens, okay, as time goes, say, from 0 to whatever. So if I put t equal to 0 in here, what do I get? I get a 0. And if I go along, I get to a certain point, the sine becomes a maximum at 1. So I'm going to go from 0 to V0, and then I'm going to swing around and become negative V0. Well, all I have to do is follow one of these orange curves, right? I start at 0. I go to a peak of V0. I drop down to minus V0, right? So I have these things oscillating. I can represent this by doing the following. I can draw an arrow. That arrow is what, well, phasor, you might think of it as a vector because it looks like an arrow, right? Okay, but anyway, I'm going to draw this arrow, and it's going to, it basically is a vector because vectors have magnitude and direction. The magnitude of this direction of vector, I'm going to let that be the peak value, V0. So let's say that is a vector of length, V0. And then the angle that I'm going to specify is that angle. So at a given time, I compute what that angle is. Well, it's going to be in radians, as we know. All right, but right now I don't care about the value. I just care about that it's an angle. And that angle is going to be the angle that this vector is at any given time. So as time progresses, what's that phasor going to do? As t changes, what happens? The angle changes. So what does the vector do?
Changes direction.
Yeah. Yeah, and just rotates. If I pin down the tail, right, it's just a vector that goes around and around and around, depending what the time is. Okay? Now the key here is that if I look at the shadow of this vector on the vertical axis, that has meaning. Okay, so far, very abstract, right? The question is, what's the meaning? So how do I get a shadow? Shine a light, and I can just look at the shadow. How big is that shadow at a given time? Well, how big is it in this case? Well, let's see, that is the same as this height. I have a right triangle. That is opposite the angle.
Sine.
Tells me sine function. I think sine function when I think opposite, right? So, sine of the angle. There's a sine 2 pi ft times the hypotenuse. That's the height. So this function is represented by that height. What is the height when t equals 0?
Zero.
Exactly what we get on the red portions of these puffs. When does it reach a maximum?
One.
When sine is 1. Right? And in which case this thing is pointing straight up. Right? Sine is 1 at 90 degrees, so or pi over 2 radians. Okay, so when this is pi over 2 radians, right? I've gone all the way up. So as this is rotating, the shadow is just going up and down between V0 and minus V0. Just tracing out the same curve. Okay, if I were just plotting that as a function of time, then moving on, all right, I get my sine function. So that's what the phasers are doing. All right? As that rotates around, this gives me that height. Okay. All right, so that's the key. Now the question is, what about these guys? What I can do is represent each of these with a phasor. And it turns out the sum of these phasors should be equal to that phasor. Okay, that's what this means, okay, in terms of Kirchhoff's laws. But what it does is gives me a diagram, and from that diagram I'll be able to read off and get information about the voltage and the current. Okay, so that's where I'm headed. All right. So let's see, how do I want to do this? Okay, for resistors. If I just have a resistor, we can imagine that the voltage across the resistor, okay, is given by a certain value. So going to the very first problem right here, I have a voltage across the resistor. I'd actually written this out, right? I had written down V is equal to that. Then I can get what the current is from here by simply dividing by the resistance, right? And we wrote that down, that the current is just going to be an I0 times the same kind of sign. So that means the phasor will have the same angle. Okay, so if I were to think about that, what I can do is say that for a resistor, if the voltage is pointing along this direction, this is 2 pi ft, then the current will also be pointing in this same direction. It may have magnitude. So for a resistor, if I just have a resistor connected to the voltage supply, then the current is also a phasor pointing in the same direction as the voltage. That's what it means to be in phase. They're pointing in the same direction. Capacitors. If I have a capacitor, I can do a similar thing. So far I'm not putting all of these things together. I'm not putting all the elements together in here yet. I'm just looking at the individual cases that we went through the other day, but I'm going to write them in terms of phasors. So in this case I can do again. There's my voltage phasor of length V0, and what direction is the current. Well, what do we know about the current? The current leads by 90 degrees, so it's ahead by 90 degrees, which means the current is actually, right, if this is rotating, the current has already passed, say, the vertical, right? It's ahead. It's ahead by 90 degrees, so 90 degrees is perpendicular to zero, so there's the current. Right? And that has some length I zero. Okay. So now there's the current spinning around, and these are going around like this. Right? It's always 90 degrees ahead, so they're spinning around. Current's always 90 degrees ahead. If I want to know at a particular time, I stop this, freeze it at that time, I look at the shadow, that's the value of the voltage at that particular time. I look at the shadow, that's the value of the current at that time. Okay, so if I just look at the shadows on the vertical, those give me the values that I could just read off this graph at a particular time. Okay. So that's the meaning of these things. When I get done explaining all this and putting it all together, I'm going to have a nice little simplified form that we'll compute with. Okay. But it helps to understand the simplified form that we're going to have. All right, so we think we understand this, we ought to be able to write down what happens when I just have an inductor. Again, pick out my V0 at a particular time at angle 2 pi ft. Where do you think the phasor is going to be for the current?
It's going
to be lagging by 90 degrees, so it's going to be 90 degrees in that direction, that's right. It's not a very good 90, but that's just, we'll do that, and then we know it's 90. Okay, so that's now 90 degrees. So as the voltage is going around, you see the current. Now, in this position, we notice that the voltage is positive, the current is negative. It's right, reminiscent of something back here, some point back here, where the current's negative and the voltage is positive. So this all matches up with this. All right, and then what I really want to do, though, is I want to convert these things so that I can put it all together in terms of these three. Because what I'm going to do now is put all three of these in the circuit together in series. And so I'm going to add three of these together, three phasors, and the sum of these three phasors is going to give me V0. Okay, so in general, for RCL phasor diagram, I look at a particular time. At a particular time, okay, I have a potential drop across here, across there, across there. For the resistor, okay, we can indicate, okay, basically, I'm going to write a phasor for the voltage across the resistor. Now, I have to be careful with my diagrams and the ones in the book. What I'm going to do is I want to note that right now I'm still talking about phasor whose length is the peak value. Okay? In a little bit, what I'm going to do is I'm going to divide these by squares of 2 and turn them into RMS values. So that's the value of R0. Okay? And now what I have to do is I have to indicate the voltage across the current of the inductor and the capacitor. Okay. And these are going to be at 90 degrees. okay, to this. So if I have the current going across the resistor, all right, that current is going to be in phase with this. And then we can think, well, that's the current. Now what does that tell me about the voltages? And the voltages have to be perpendicular to that, going across the capacitor and the inductor. So I'm just indicating a line. I haven't drawn anybody yet. So what I have to do next is ask, okay, because I'm thinking that the current is in this direction as well. But if that's the current that's going across the capacitor, then which way is the voltage pointing? Is it pointing this way or is it pointing that way? All right, the current is going across here. So think about the current. I0, that's going through at a particular moment. The question is, where is the phasor for the capacitor? And so we have to go back to the capacitor. Well, here's a capacitor. The current leads by 90 degrees. So where's the voltage arrow pointing? Downward, right? The current's ahead. You have to think about this as the current is along the same direction as the resistor. Voltage across the resistor. So you actually have that will be which way the voltage across the capacitor is going, because that voltage is lagging, or the current's leading the voltage. Which then I go to the inductor, right? The voltage is ahead of the current. So the voltage, here's the current, the voltage is across that way. Okay, so this is getting us close to where I want to be. These are the main values the whole time. Oh, and I should put some zeros on these because I'm talking about the peaks. That's what I'm about ready to say. Right, all of these are the peak values. But I can divide them all by the square root of 2 and turn these all into RMS values. Okay, now what the book would do is write RMS along these, but to me that's too much writing. I'm going to spend more time talking about RMS values, and so what I'm going to do is write my VLs, VCs, and everything to be the RMS values, and not write RMS, just to save on writing. All right? We don't like too many subscripts. Okay, so my diagram. Same diagram, just different labeling. But for your notes, it's better to come down. So here I go. I'm going to have the voltage across the resistor, RMS value. Right? I'm just dividing by the square root of 2. You don't see me doing anything but changing labels. All right, the current somewhere. We have no idea the exact relationship between these lengths. We just know they're in the same direction. This will be the RMS value for the current. In fact, this one I'll leave. Let me call that RMS, because my equation will have RMS in it. And then I have two perpendiculars. I have one going in that. Let's see, how do I want to indicate? I'm going to make that one a little bit longer than this one because of the next diagram. All right, so this is going to be my VC. That's going to be VL. Okay. Here's my phasors to this point. Now I have relationships between all the RMS values. But what do we know about these RMS values? If I know what the current is going across the resistor, right, and I know the RMS value, then I can relate the RMS value to the RMS value of the voltage through Ohm's law. Right? V is IR, or V is just the IRMS times R. What's this? VC? VC is IRMS times XC. And then VL is IRMS times the inductive reactance. Okay. So I could do something else now. I could divide all these quantities by rescale them and divide out all the RMS values and just leave the XLs, XC, and the R. Okay? So actually, one more diagram. So a lot of the little diagrams, they're all reducing to about the same thing. So in this direction, I can represent R. In that direction is XC. And in this direction, up in that direction is XL. And that's what I want to focus on. For now. Okay. Let's see, where am I headed? Where I'm headed is the following, right? I have V, R, VC, VL. I can write these all in terms of IRMS, R, L, R, XL, XC, and I want to relate that to V. I've reduced this V now to VRMS, and what I want to do is tell you that VRMS, which is being provided by this, that's a V0 divided by the square root of 2, is related to the current that's going through this. It's related to the RMS value. So for that whole circuit, VRMS is IRMS times something. And that something is the overall effect of having those three circuit elements. And that something is not an X. Like I said earlier, we're going to put in a Z. And the goal is to find out what this Z is. And Z is called the impedance. Now the actual value we get for V, we just sum these, but we sum these as vectors. So if what I can do is come back to my, this is my first picture, this one. If I add VR, VC, VL as vectors, I'm going to get some total vector, and that total vector is the phasor for V. That total vector is going to be at the phase angle phi that I'm looking for, and it's going to have a length equal to V0. But I can adjust that length by dividing out, right? I divide it by the square root of 2 to get to here, so I can get the RMS value of the input voltage. I can then divide out the IRMS value and I get Z. So the point is that if I take these vectors and add them up, I get a vector Z, or phasor Z, which has length of impedance, and it's going to be an angle, which is the phase angle. So that's where I'm headed. Now, adding these vectors looks a little complicated, right? I've got three vectors to add. One of the things I can do is note that these two vectors are along the same line. So how do you add vectors that are in the same line like that? What was that? I heard somebody. You could subtract them. All right, if this is of length 2 and that's of length 3, then there's a vector in that direction of length 1, right? So what I'm going to do is make another diagram that looks simpler. I'll take XL minus XC, and I drew it that way just so I get my vector pointing in that direction. It's not always going to be pointing that way. XL could be less than XC, in which case it would point this way. But I've got to choose a direction somewhere. So what I'm going to get is, I'm going to get a picture that has XL minus XC, and then I'm going to have an R. Now I can visualize what the sum is. All right? Just draw a little parallelogram. Well, in this case, it's more than a parallel, because that is at a right angle. I draw a little parallelogram, and just the way the lens side happens to be going up, it's not really going up. But the sum is Z as a vector. Okay, now note that, okay, basically what we have is that the current in this direction is along the direction of R. What I can do is say that 2 pi FT is this angle, and if I add to it this little bit, that'll give me the angle and the sine function for the voltage. Well, for the current. And so this little angle that's between the two of these is the base. Okay. All right. So if you followed me, you have some sense, okay, as to where the next stuff is that I'm going to write down. Because all of this is just a description of what these phasors are. All I'm doing is developing a little diagram, which is going to allow us to remember how to compute the impedance in the phase. All right, so all the rest of this we can now forget. And we only need to remember the triangle that I have coming up. I'm going to take this triangle and I'm going to redraw it. Just rotate it a little bit. And we're going to write R in this direction. Okay. And I'm going to write XL minus XC. I'm just redrawing that triangle in a nice oriented form. And the sum of those two is the phasor Z. The angle is two. Now I know what XL is, or at least it's on the other side of the board. Okay. This 2 pi FL. XC is 1 over 2 pi FC. I know what those are if I know the inductance, the capacitance. The resistance is easy, it's just R side. That's a right triangle. So I can express the hypotenuse in terms of the sides. Right. So here's the hard-earned result. What's the hypotenuse, right? Z squared is this squared plus that squared. So I just have to say Z is the square root of the sums of the squares of the legs. That's R squared plus XL minus XC squared. That's the impedance. The phase angle I can get from the tangent of phi is the opposite, which is XL minus XC, divided by the adjacent. The triangle. So this is my mnemonic. I could have just put this up a half hour ago and said, memorize this. But going through the phasors gives you a little light feeling, maybe, for why this makes any sense or how it's even connected to the circuit. But that's all you really need to work with. Now you understand where it came from. And then what does this give me? Okay, if I supply that circuit with a voltage source which has an RMS voltage, I can tell you what the current is in the circuit, the RMS value of the measured or the measured current, because I can relate these. V is equal to IZ. Okay. So once again, here's an R, a C, and an L. I know what those are. I put in a source. If I know what the source has, an RMS value for the voltage, I can tell you what the RMS value of the current is. There it is. Whereas if I know the RMS value of the current, I can get the peak value of the current because I just have to multiply that by the square of 2. And then I can tell you what the current is at any time in functional form if I want, because I can get the phase. That'll tell me at any moment when I met, if you look at the current, what that current is. Okay. And so that is pretty much some of the main stuff that comes across. And now all you have to do is compute some things. Not only can I tell you that, but now that I know what the current is, I can tell you what the voltage drop is across the resistor at a given time. Or I can tell you what the RMS, the measured value is. So if I were to take a voltmeter, connect it across here, I can tell you what the reading is. How do you get that reading? Well, once I know the RMS value of this, okay, then I can go back, multiply it by the resistance and get the voltage, multiply it by the different reactances, and I can get the voltage across the other circuit elements. Okay? So that's what this will give you. Okay, once you're done with it. So what's in this panel is the important part. Because from that you can go off and say a few more things about the circuit. Obviously it gets more complicated if I start throwing more circuit elements in, as I said before. Or if I even put in a parallel. Parallel is a completely different animal. So we're not doing anything more than the RCO. I actually have online an example that I already set up, so let me pull that up. So I'm going to the chapters 21 to 23 section of the website. At the very bottom of the page, okay, I have an RLC example. So that's RLC as opposed to RCL. And so here's an example sitting here. You can't read it from where you are, but the idea is you have a voltage source, it's 25 volts, 1.2 times 10 to the 4 hertz, resistance of 50 ohms, a capacitance of 6 times 10 to the minus 9 farads, an inductance of 28 times 10 to the minus 3 henries. So with particular values in there, right, one can compute all sorts of things. Well, fortunately, I printed out one of these. So I want to say, before I go further into that, let's see if I can pull this up. Another thing I have up here is a very simple sheet, which summarizes some of what I just did, right? Okay, so things you need to know from what we've been doing the last 2 days. Okay, we need to know the reactances, capacitive and inductive reactance. All right, so XC and XL. The impedance is given by the formula I just derived. The current, we know the current is given by V over Z. In these cases, capital I's and the capital V's are the RMS values, and little I's and little V's are the peak values. Okay, and some previous text that I've used, that was standard, so you wouldn't have to use so many subscripts. And then the voltage across the individual circuit elements, which I just mentioned, V is equal to IR across the resistor, VC is IXC, VL is IXL. Okay, phase difference, the tangent of phi is equal to that. And so you say that the voltage leads the current by whatever that value of phi is. Okay, and there's a little diagram. So it's all in there, plus a little bit more, but, well, one more line.
So that's useful.
So for this particular example, I don't know, just so we have a few numbers, that I know how you love numbers. Okay, plug in things in. So let's see. VRMS, the voltage source, is 25 volts, and we have a frequency of 1.2 times 10 to the 4th hertz. That's enough to specify what the source is. Okay. Or one could give peak voltage either way, but since I'm going to be working with RMS values, that's good enough. And then we have a resistance of 50 ohms. We have a capacitance of, and I'm not paying too much attention to sig figs in defining these. If I were more careful, I would put in a desired number of significant digits in all of these. Quick typing. And let's say L, the inductance, is 28 times 10 to the minus 3 henries. So those are various things that one can compute. If I were interested in determining what the impedance were, okay, then I have to put in L, I mean R, XL and XC. Well, the problem with XL and XC is that's not given. So maybe a good thing to do is actually just compute them right now so I have them. Okay, and then, you know, maybe they'll be a little round off, but, you know, because I computed them right away, but that's not a big deal. It makes life a little easier, though. So XL is 2 pi FL, which is 2 pi 1.2 times 10 to the 4th. And L is 28 times 10 to the minus 3, all in basic units. And one sees what one gets. Well, supposedly, this turns out to be something like 2.11 times 10 to the 3rd ohms. And then you can compute X sub C, which is 1 over 2 pi F C. So it's 2 pi F times C. You might want to do 2 pi F times C, get a number, then invert it. And you might forget to put parentheses around when you're sticking these things in your calculator. You get the wrong answers. Okay, so if we do this, we should get something like 2.21 times 10 to the 3rd ohm. Okay, again, as a reminder, the units are ohms. Right, so then I'm going to put in ohms. I'm putting ohms for R. When I get done, Z is going to have units of ohms. Okay? So now that we know XL and XC, you can compute Z, which is going to be the square root R squared plus XL minus XC quantity squared. The resistance is 50 ohms, so I can put in 50. The difference between the two of these, well, I have to be a little bit careful, all right, because that's, and I'm going to square that, so it won't matter too much, but XL minus XC, XL is bigger, so that actually turns out to be negative. So XL minus XC, I guess that's useful to know, is minus 99.3. Now when I did this, just trying to think, this might have been done in a way that it was all computed internally. So the values were probably computed for further than what are displayed on the page. But anyway, that's 99, so I get the square 99, I get the square, what was it, 50, add them together, take the square root, and we get the.
So that's not too bad. Let's see, what do we get? About 111 ohms, 110 ohms, if I have two sig figs.
Okay, so that's what Z is. So once I know Z, I could ask, what is the current? So all of this computation is really preliminary to asking the question. Okay. Take that resistor, this capacitor, that inductor, with this voltage source, put them together, and tell me what the measured value of the current is. So how do I get the measured value of the current? Well, the measured value of the current I can solve from this key equation. That's just V divided by Z. So IRMS is going to be VRMS divided by impedance. VRMS is 25. The impedance is about 110. I take the ratio of those, and I get 220.225 amps. Again, not paying attention to six figures. So now I know what current is. That's the measured value of the current. What about the phase angle? The tangent of phi is given by XL minus XC divided by R. So XL minus XC, I told you I computed already, and that's about negative 100. Okay, divide that by the resistance, 50. And so this becomes something roughly negative 2. I'm rounding off. If I make that 100, divide by 50, that's 2. Okay, so we have the tangent of phi is negative 2. So the question is, does the current lead or lag the voltage? So if I come over here, I've got current leads the voltage by whatever. Now I probably don't need to look at that right now, so I'm going to turn that light off. Now, what I want to refer to is these diagrams, right? The current leads the voltage if I just have a capacitor. What I could imagine is looking at these equations and ask, what happens here to this if I only have a capacitor? Then the numerator is negative. Of course, the denominator is zero. That makes things a little difficult, right? Because you were taught you're not allowed to divide by zero, right? But basically what that means, that's undefined. Do we know any angles that if you try to take the tangent, you get an error? On your calculator? Tangent of large positive angles gives phi 90. If I look at large small angles, negative angles, but because notice here, if there's no inductor, that's negative. Let's think of, instead of R being zero, let's just think of R being a small number. So this is going to be a large negative number. So I have a large negative slope. So that would be going back the other way. And so my angle will be negative 90. If you try to take the tangent of negative 90 or 270, you're going to have problems too. So the idea here is if I have a negative tangent, that means this behaves more like a capacitor than an inductor when it comes to leading and lagging. Okay, so the angle I get out, we're going to say that the current, since it's more like a capacitor, the current leads the voltage by whatever the value that comes out from my angle, the magnitude of that angle. Did anybody actually get me the value of this tangent? So phi is the inverse tangent.
Negative 63.
Of negative 2, that's what?
Negative 63.
Is negative 63, 2, 3?
63.
3. So, what I'm trying to do is get you to think about what does this actually mean? Okay? If that were purely a capacitor, that would be negative 90 degrees. And so we would say that the current leads the voltage by 90 degrees. But for this particular set of values, the current is going to lead the voltage because of the minus sign, and it's going to lead by 63 degrees. Okay? So current leads voltage by 63. Okay? So those are some key things to think about when doing this. It's all boiled down relatively pretty much to this in the example. Okay? If I want to know what the current is in there, I have to find the impedance. To find the impedance, I need the reactances. I get that. Now I can get the current, and I can tell you where the current leads or lags and by how much. Okay, that's what this picture gives me, what I spent time driving. What other kinds of things can I say about these things? All right, so to wrap up the chapter, there's a couple more things of importance. Okay. One thing that's relatively important is the concept of resonance. Have we seen resonance before, like in Physics 1? Yes, no, maybe. Where have you seen resonance before?
Chemistry.
Yeah, that's possible. That's not what I wanted, but
harmonic.
Yeah. But resonance happens when you have a driving force and you try to excite the system, okay, at its natural frequency. And so if I have a mass on a spring and I let it go up and down and up and down, right? So I pull it down and it just has a natural oscillation. Now what happens when I start doing this to my spring? All right? If I do this, I have to be very careful because what I can really do is when this is going up, I could be pushing down, interrupting the flow. But if it's going down and I push down, I'm feeding energy, making the amplitude grow. And when it's coming back up, I pull up. And if I can just vibrate just at the right time, I can cause those oscillations to grow and get bigger and bigger and bigger. Okay, of course, those are important because some of those can do things like destroy bridges or airplane wings. And so there's all kinds of things that resonances may cause that aren't good. On the other hand, there are some good
effects due to resonance.
Okay, so in this particular case, I can do the same thing for an electric circuit. Let's imagine that I have a charged capacitor and I connect it to an inductor. All right, so if I had a charged capacitor without an inductor, with just a wire connected, we know that what will happen is the capacitor will discharge. And we saw that earlier in the semester. But in this case, since I've connected an inductor to it, this stored electrical energy is going to leave the capacitor, but it's going to cause current flowing through the inductor, right? And then we're going to cause a magnetic field. We're going to get an induced current, right? But we're going to actually take that electrical energy, we're going to store it as magnetic energy. But just like a spring that I've stored energy and then I release it, right? It goes up and then it squishes, right? Well, let's see. If I have it squished, I've stored some energy. If I pull it, so basically when it gets in the middle, all of that energy is converted to kinetic energy, but it's got momentum and it just keeps going. It doesn't stop, right? The same thing here. This charge is going to flow off, and the next thing I know, it's going to build up, right? It was positive here, negative there. Now it's positive here, negative there, right? And then it's going to go and release the other way. And what we end up doing is getting current that goes back and forth and back and forth with a natural oscillation, a natural frequency. Okay? And then the question is, what happens if I come over here now and add a generator which I can tune the frequency, and I change vary the frequency of the generator and see what the response is? Well, something's bad going to happen when I go near the natural frequency. Very much, right? You have the same thing with a kid on a swing, right? You have a kid swinging back and forth, a pendulum motion, right? You keep pushing it just at the right time, right? When they come up and they're ready to go back, you give them a little more energy, keep doing that, you're going to get that thing eventually, if you continue to do that, swing all the way around. Okay, so it's the same kind of thing, right? If I'm driving this at its natural frequency of oscillation, then we find out that we have problems. And we can detect this by, say, looking at the current. So what happens in a system like this? If I have an inductor and a capacitor, I could take the RMS voltage that's being supplied, compare it to the RMS value of the current. I can solve for the RMS value of the current, and that would tell me what this is. Well, what is the RMS value? Well, the RMS value of the current is just the voltage, RMS value of the voltage divided by the impedance. Now, in order to do anything with frequencies, I'm going to have to get the impedance written out, right? Because that, remember, and the impedance are the XLs and XCs, which have frequencies in them, so that's where the frequencies vary. So what is the impedance for this circuit? This circuit, well, it's not an RLC circuit or an RCL circuit, is it? Because there's no R. So this kind of a circuit is actually referred to as an LC circuit. What is Z for an LC circuit? Well, let's come back to my Z here. What happens when there's no L, there's no R? It's the square root of XL minus XC. So this is going to look something like VRMS and the square root of XL minus XC. And being that these are generally positive quantities I'm thinking about, I'm just going to have to value there. What's XL? Well, XL is 2 pi FL. XC is 1 over 2 pi FC. Those are two numbers. If I change F, I can see what happens to that quantity. But it's entirely possible that I could make this zero. If I just pick F correctly. Right, for a given L and a given C, if I find F just right, this current is going to jump to infinity. So what happens here is if I can plot, that's not a good, okay, I can plot the current versus the frequency that's in there, and we will see that we get some kind of curve that goes to infinity. If I come this way along F or I come that way, there's a point here where that curve becomes infinite because I'm driving it just at its natural frequency. So in electrical circuits, that's what we get. Now in reality, that's not quite accurate because we don't have zero resistance. We may have a little bit of resistance in the wires or in the inductor or whatever. So R may cannot be zero. R could be very small, in which case if R is not zero, XL equal XC, that's zero, I would basically get a peak in the current. I wouldn't get infinity. All right, so that won't necessarily go all the way to infinity, but I'll get this steep peak. Okay? And the question is, what is the frequency that gives that to me? Okay? So we have resonance. When XL equals XC. So that's the condition for resonance. And this principle is actually used for tuning radios. Right, you go out, okay, and tune various frequencies. You get this kind of peak is related to the radio signal. And if somebody else has a radio signal and they want to amplify right where the signal is, they come over here. They could be close to yours. And if they're too close, of course, then you end up hearing two radio stations at the same time. Okay, so they use this principle for in a more advanced circuitry, but the same idea for developing tuners and receivers. All right, XL is equal to XC. When is that going to happen? 2 pi FL is equal to 1 over 2 pi F. So as I say, given a C and given an L, is there an F that makes this true? The F that makes that true is called the resonant frequency, and in the book, we put a little sub-zero there to distinguish it from a general frequency. Well, let's see, I can do something with that. There's a 2 pi F zero, there's a 2 pi F zero. Put them both on the left, so I have 2 pi F zero quantity squared. Bring the L down to the right. That's 1 over LC. And now you can solve that, right? Take the square root of both sides, divide by 2 pi. And my resonant frequency, therefore, is 1 over 2 pi, square root of LC. And now typical problems are, give me an L. Give me a C, what's F zero? Or if I know what C is and I want a particular frequency, find L. But that's the basic idea of resonance. And that's